please click the subscribe button and the notification icon. It will help us a lot. Hi, this is Rodrigo from Level Up, and today's guest is Sarah Hill. She's the CEO of StoryUp XR, which means extended reality. And her interactive media tech, she is an interactive media tech professional with 25 years building successful platforms. Her company, StoryUp, makes Helium the world's first biometrically powered virtual reality and augmented reality channel controlled by the user's brains and heart rate via wearables, which is something that I found completely crazy because I never in my wildest imagination I thought that virtual reality or augmented reality could be used in this way. She's a former interactive TV news journalist from the NBC, ABC, and CBS. She is a National Edward R. Murrow and NBA Service to America, National Sigma Delta Chi, and 12-time Mid-America Emmy Award-winning storyteller. She spent decades reporting about the world's negativity and trauma in five continents. She started working with augmented reality filters when she was working in TV newscasting back in 2011. And she creates a variety of what she calls extended reality, or XR. Inputs included VCI, heart rate variability, and respiration trackers. She's passionate about the transition of storytelling to story living and the extended reality effects on well-being. As an alum of the Missouri School of Journalism and former adjunct faculty, her reporting has been taking her to learn around the world, capturing stories about the human spirit in the Amazon, in the United Arab Emirates, in the Congo, in Guatemala, right next to my country, El Salvador, in Zambia, in China as well, and StoryUp groups are in virtual reality for veterans. Back in 2015, Hill created a team program called Honor Everywhere that uses virtual reality to allow aging veterans the opportunity to see her World War II, Vietnam and Korea and women memorials. So with this introduction and without further ado, welcome Sarah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having us on the show today. And we are excited to chat with you a little bit more about Helium. So yeah, thank you for the introduction.
So how did you come with this idea? Because to be honest, like I'm a really big guy delving to VR, animations, all these kind of technologies. I'm a very techie guy, and I would have never put together that virtual reality and augmented reality could go in this way, like trying to use it for pretty much health problems and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So Helium is a virtual and augmented reality product that's powered by a brain-computer interface, a brain-sensing headband, or a smartwatch via your heart rate. So essentially, it's an interactive media channel that you're powering with the data that comes from your wearables. So a brain-computer interface sounds like a big, bulky piece of equipment, but it's not. It's just a little headband that you wear on your forehead, and then you're using those different feeling states in order to control the virtual and augmented reality environment. And we have a few different published studies, Frontiers in Psychology, Journal of Neuroregulation, the Scholarly Journal of Behavioral Science and Psychology, all found that Helium reduced anxiety and increased feelings of positivity quickly in as little as 4 minutes. So think of it as like a little portable digital chill pill, if you will, that's powered by your biometric information.
And how do you put this together? Like, because I imagine that there will be a need for a very, very intelligent team in many areas to kind of put these two things together.
Yeah, we have a great team. So we're a group of technologists, interactive storytellers, game designers, developers, neurofeedback specialists, And psychologists as well. So a variety of different disciplines who are putting our heads together to try to, you know, figure out how do you power these experiences with different feeling states. Instead of passively watching a mindfulness or meditative experience, you actually have some power steering, if you will, to know, okay, am I meeting the mark? Because you can see your brainwave patterns react, your heart rate react, to the media that you're actually seeing on the screen. So it's not just, you know, sitting back and watching a beautiful, you know, experience of a waterfall. It's actually you are controlling that waterfall. You know, you're able to float up the side of a waterfall if you're thinking happy thoughts or you are calming your mind. Whatever you're doing, the environment reacts to your biometrics and rewards you visually when you're doing it right.
Nice. And I see that you can even use this for traditional meditation for people who are having problems. I have to admit that I am one of these people. I'm the kind of people that when I'm trying to meditate, like my mind starts to wander. It's like, oh, thinking, every time like thinking and trying to go back. And also that helps for burnout, which I think that anybody who doing entrepreneurship has felt at least a couple of times in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, stress is a $300 billion people and profit killer. It causes 60% of all illness and disease. So, you know, this is a drugless solution, a self-awareness tool to have a little bit of escape and to be reminded that your thoughts have power to control things, not only in the virtual world inside Helium, but also when you, you know, don't have our augmented reality app or a virtual reality app in the real world as well. And all of these experiences are story-driven narratives that are meant to be easy to remember, like a butterfly hatching out of a chrysalis and how change in human life takes time, a magic snow globe that you're able to control the flurries with your feelings of calm or your feelings of positivity, or, you know, floating up the side of a waterfall, easy to remember imagery that's then, you know, burned into your brain, and the brain believes what it sees. You know, we are visual learners, you know, visual thinkers. So, you know, the ability to see and to know how your body is responding to experience is incredibly valuable for traditional meditators or for people who struggle with traditional meditation. We all know the great value of traditional meditation. This is just a flavor of it in a way that is, like I said, power steering, if you will, to know how your inside biometric information reacts. I mean, can you imagine swinging a tennis racket and never seeing your hand and the follow through to know whether or not are you actually hit, like, it, you know, can you imagine that? Not even seeing it? And yet that's what we're trying to do with our minds and our bodies, to control something that we've never seen. So, you know, that's the power of helium. It's gravity, if you will. It's a feeling mirror that, you know, allows you to better control or regulate those senses.
Nice. And how did you come up with this idea? Because I think it's not an easy idea to come up with.
Yeah, it's kind of far-fetched, right? But it makes total sense when you think about my background and what I experienced. So I was a television newscaster for decades, and I struggled with panic attacks. And if you've ever had one, you know that what follows that attack is the inability to sleep. And so I had, you know, a long time where I wasn't able to sleep. I reached out to a friend of mine who's a neurofeedback specialist and wrote a software program for me that I glued these electrodes on my head and, you know, sat in front of this laptop and watched a very boring plane go up and down and tried to control it with my thoughts in order to train myself to slow my mind. And I would make up stories about this, software program. So, you know, really Helium is a combination of that friend, you know, his software program with what I do, which is storytelling and technology and augmented and virtual reality. And that friend, Dr. Jeff Tarrant, is now my business partner and the co-founder of the company. So I write the stories. He writes the brainwave algorithms that goes into them. And together, our technology is empowering not only our media platform, but also future media platforms that want to be controlled by the user's brain patterns or heart rate.
Something that I'm trying to do with these interviews as well is because he's trying to kind of learn what's coming next, because there's so many new technologies coming up, and they use this. When I'm trying to find people to interview, it just blows my mind, like the things that are coming, and I'm thinking like, wow, like in the next 10 years, there is going to be, like, reality is going to be so much crazier than it is today. And something that keeps me thinking is like, this is something that has never existed before. So when it comes to that, like when you're trying to sell the idea of a business model that has never even existed before, or trying to create something like that, what are the challenges that are coming up in order to make this a reality?
Yeah, it's hard for people to understand something that they, if they never powered an experience with their emotions or their brain patterns or their heart rate, they're like, what the heck are you talking about? And, you know, we got a lot of that early on, or people who didn't believe us or don't believe when they use helium that it's their brain patterns or heart rate that are controlling it. There are, you know, people like that as well. So, you know, it can be challenging to, educate people for either fundraising or, some of our sales channel partners if they've never controlled it in with their biometric information. But once they do, they're like, oh, I get it. You can see what's going on inside you, and therefore, you know, be better able to be more self-aware about what you need to think about that makes that line go up or up or down. So, virtual reality is completely closed environment inside goggles. Augmented reality is outside of the goggles, just with your mobile device. So you can use helium in two different ways, either completely closed environment, which is the most immersive, and we have a limited amount of data that shows that, you know, it is the most engaging because the brain believes what it sees. But then with augmented reality, you're just using your mobile device and then a consumer wearable to plug it in order to control some of those holograms. So all of these extended reality environments are part of an industry called spatial computing. And it is, when I say spatial computing, I mean the world is transforming from a flat 2D space for media, flat 2D media, into be a 360-degree environment where you are interacting with those social media, images, information, experiences in a completely 360-degree way. And so, you know, when we talk about what's coming down the bend, the world is no longer flat. It's a place that has become where we can step inside these worlds and not just watch something through the filter of the fixed rectangle, 2D rectangle on your phone. You can go inside the phone and be inside, you know, wherever you want. Just with your mobile device and our technology, you can, open a portal, step inside that portal, and you're instantly in China or in, you know, Thailand or any place else. So, you know, when we talk about virtual and augmented reality or XR, and X stands for any of the extended realities, whether it be augmented reality or virtual reality, those aren't future technologies. Those are here that you all and anybody who has a mobile device, you know, has the ability to experience. And chances are that they've probably already used that technology once before, whether it be, you know, with Snapchat or a face filter that they've used on Facebook or something like that. And they just haven't known what to call it.
Definitely.
But it's augmented or virtual reality.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm inside the animation industry. I usually work for other companies doing the animation videos, so for the explainer videos, or trying to do animated series as well. And I've been around a lot of people who are like in Disney and Pixar and kind of those things. Even they are having problems trying to understand how to use this new technology, the virtual reality, and how to create their art in it. One of the few artists that is going really deep with that is, his name is Goro Fujita, and he's like creating these short animations with virtual reality and putting into Instagram. But when it comes to that, knowing that there are not many people who actually can create this kind of works, this kind of settings, have you had problems trying to find employees or people who can help you to actually create this, or have you been able to solve that situation using the internet and all these things?
Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of people who can build worlds with game engines, whether that be using Unity or Unreal game engines. There are developers out there, designers out there. You know, we have a great team that does that with us. But we had to learn and teach ourselves in order to add biometric inputs into the game engine. Like, there are very few people that I'm aware of out there who natively have the experience of, well, I know how to create, you know, biometrically, I controlled EEG-powered, heart rate-powered media experiences. Like, if we were to put that out, you know, do you have experience? Nobody would answer that call, because it's a skill that doesn't exist. So we had to train ourselves, how do you create those experiences? We had to develop the technology in order to do it. And then, two, you know, train each other in our system and put out the call for future people. We were hiring for a Unity developer right now to complement some of our existing design and dev work. So you have to learn those things. And such is the case with any emerging platform. The skills don't exist. You know, you have to teach yourself how to create AR or VR experiences.
Nice.
That are controlled by biometrics.
Yeah, definitely. And you have, as far as I understand, you have secure funding for Helium. And when it comes to that, what was your experience trying to sell this idea to venture capitalists? Again, coming back to this thing where you have to explain something that is, one, has never existed, two, it's very mm-hmm. complex to explain. How was your experience trying to go through that?
Yeah, so it was tough early on, specifically before we had a product in the market, because you're trying to describe something that they've never done before, and you say, well, you're going to be controlling these experiences with data from your wearables, your brain patterns, your heart rate. And then, you know, they're like, what? And then some of them were like, sure you are. Mm-hmm, right. There's a healthy dose of skepticism. But only when we quickly realize, oh, we got to build it first, you know, before people realize, you know, what we're talking about. So we built it. And then once you had a prototype, well, then that's when the funding come in. So we recently closed on a $1.3 million oversubscribed round, and we're excited to use that funding in order to scale Helium into new markets, you know, secure additional IP, and create additional content. Every 60 days, we have a new piece of content that comes out on our platform, so it never gets old for our subscribers. There's a new experience that you can control with the data from your wearables.
Nice. And also, what are your plans for this platform going into the future?
Yeah, so we're adding additional wearables to the platform. We just added Apple Watch not too long ago, and that's the first AR experience that's powered by your Apple Watch, powered by you, your heart rate, and you're able to use it to hatch butterflies out of a chrysalis, illuminate the planets, grow flowers, do all kinds of fun things just by lowering that heart rate.
Nice. Amazing. Also, how long did it take you to create kind of the prototype and get to this point?
So our company is 4 years old, but we started out just learning how to create VR and AR experiences. At first, at the core, we needed to learn how to do that. We spent about a year studying, researching how are these experiences impacting. It was a group of veterans that we started out with, showing them virtual tours and, you know, seeing what does this kind of media do to brain patterns and heart rate, and can we compound it and create it in a way that actually has some kind of benefit for people. And the answer to all those questions were, yes, you can. You know, one study was published, another study was published, and now we have three peer-reviewed journal articles that showing that, you know, our technology has the ability to, you know, reduce anxiety, increase feelings of positivity rather quickly. And this is just media. These are completely drugless, you know, experiences that can, you know, shift that negative narrative that's playing in their head and, you know, allow you to remember a waterfall or, you know, a beautiful environment. So it was not quick. It's not easy to create this kind of content. In fact, it's hard, but we are surrounded by people now who know how to do it, and we have the technology in place to be able to do it at scale.
And how do you see the future of virtual reality? Because I was one of the lucky ones who was able to watch the first Oculus Rift, which was like a huge box that you would put into your face. And now I have seen the new models. It is definitely way more refined. I have seen some lenses used for augmented reality, which is definitely something way more smaller than the first things that we saw a couple of years ago. What do you think is going to happen with virtual reality, augmented reality? Is this something that we are going to put like some glasses on and use it all day, or maybe something more crazy like contact lenses that work that way?
Yeah, there are people developing contact lenses. I think what you're seeing now is the convergence between virtual and augmented reality, and those headsets are becoming just like a regular pair of glasses, you know, that are transparent. They're not big and bulky, they're opaque, and that, you know, very soon you'll be able to flip between virtual and augmented reality worlds, just, you know, manipulating a button on your glasses. There have been some recent articles coming out about Apple and what Apple is going to come out with. We don't know. Some of the rumors say it could be 6 months, and that it's some kind of AR headset that's tethered as an iPhone accessory. Nreal is another company that's building some really fascinating AR glasses. MTech is another one. So we're watching all of this hardware as a software content company, because you know all of that hardware is going to need content, and we have that content. We have a media channel, and our core, that's what our company is. We're an interactive media channel that's powered by the user's feeling states and the user's biometric information. So it'll get a lot easier to access AR and VR, or XR as we call it, as the hardware gets better.
Definitely. Now, this question that I'm going to make is a little bit tricky, but what was something that you didn't expect at all when you started Helium and working on this project that has become true, and it is something like a lesson that you would like to give to other people trying to create pretty much the future, something that has never been created?
The value of bringing in people from disciplines that you wouldn't think are related to what you do in any way. So, you know, we collaborate with everyone from chaplains to engineers to neurofeedback specialists, to psychologists, to game designers. You know, they're not necessarily tangentially, you know, related occupations. But that to me has been the most surprising thing on how much value that adds in collaborating with people outside your skill set. So for instance, at our company, we host something called Nerdy Playdates. And basically, it's just a bunch of technologists getting together and sharing about what they're passionate about, and, you know, things that, they're working on. And, you know, that's really how Helium kind of developed. It was a Nerdy Playdate between one technologist and you know, another technologist, and said, well, I can do this, you know, what can you do? Like two people with Tinker Toys. And so that to me has been the most surprising of what might else we be able to accomplish if we reach across the aisle to people who are not even, I know nothing about their world, and they know nothing about mine, but yet, you know, you get together in a room and say, this is what I can do, you know, what can you can do, and how can we build something beautiful together?
That is amazing, and that is something that I want to explore more as well with this new series of interviews, because I see that there is always a lot of value that comes up from these kind of blank spaces where nobody has yet connected one with the other. So for example, I started as a app developer doing website. That was my first kind of business, doing web design and apps. And then I joined up forces with my partner and created this animation studio. And it was kind of crazy for me, because inside this world of creativity, of animation, that I was expecting to see, I don't know, a lot of innovation, I saw that there is a lot of practices, a lot of things that are not being used, a lot of lessons that are not known there. That if you go, let's say, to Silicon Valley, to the tech world, like this is common practice, common knowledge, things like that. And when we started using this knowledge into this area, this allowed us to connect with like huge people inside the industry really fast, to advance, to learn a lot of things, to do things in a way that everybody inside the industry was getting like a little bit surprised, because they have never seen it. And they give us the credit for that, because it's like, oh, like, yeah, they are doing something great. It's like, in my mind, this is really common over this place. So there is a lot of value, as you say, like into being able to put a lot of things, a lot of disciplines that are, apparently they are not tied together, but they can be.
Yeah.
Also, this is a very original idea. Do you have any advice on how to protect an idea from being copied? This is something that we have talked as well in the interviews with the animators, because some of them have some really hard histories where they created an history and got taken away, and they didn't have any proof to kind of prove that it was their own, so they lost it. So how do you protect an idea, such an idea as this?
Well, we have a patent. So, you know, that's one way that you can protect it. You know, go to an IP attorney and go through the steps that are involved in it. You know, that would probably be the best way that I would recommend in order to protect it, or, you know, don't tell anybody about it and build a product with it and keep it in stealth. I mean, there's two ways you can protect information, whether or not I'm not an attorney, but, you know, keeping it a trade secret and not telling anyone, and just, you know, only you using it for your product, or patenting it in some way. But, yeah, get a legal consult and see how to protect those ideas.
Nice. Now, you told me that you have suffered anxiety in the past, so I really want to hear your answer on this. Whenever you feel overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do to get back to your center in order to keep kind of working in the real world?
Yeah, so I use my product, which is called Helium. But even when, you know, you don't have the augmented or the virtual reality app, you can still use it by just doing emotion recall. So imagining that virtual augmented reality environment, imagining the waterfall, the sun, the fractal animation, whatever it is, just that emotional recall in research has been shown to be able to lower heart rate and things like that. So I use, you know, our products specifically before I go to bed at night to kind of shift that negative narrative, those ruminating thoughts that are in my head. And, you know, it's self-care like anything else. You got to give yourself atta girls. You got to think about what information you are putting into your mind. And by that, I mean the media consumption that you have. You know, your media consumption is a diet, just like food is a diet. You put crap in and absolutely you're going to have, you know, anxiety, panic attacks or whatever. You have to police your media diet. And it's not the media's fault. They have to, you know, tell you about the bad things that are happening in the world, or you wouldn't know how to vote. You wouldn't be safe from a tornado or a bad storm that's coming in your area. So I think it's really wrong to blame the media for consumers having a poor media diet. We as consumers need to, you know, get rid of that negative media fiber that we're putting in and, you know, supplement it with some positive, like Helium, that actually, you know, has some self-awareness, a benefit to the user that can make people feel better. So, you know, if you're someone who struggles with anxiety, I would tell you, number one, you need to see a doctor. This is not a replacement for any kind of psychotropic medication. It's not a replacement for cognitive behavioral therapy or talking to a professional. This is a self-awareness tool. It's mindfulness and meditation on steroids, if you will, with some data behind it, you know, that shows with self-report anxiety, it has benefits. So, yeah, police what you're putting into your mind and into your thoughts. I lived by a police scanner for about 20 years as a television news reporter, covered, you know, trauma, rapes, murders, interviewed people who'd lost children. And it's very common. You see a lot of journalists now coming out to talk about their struggle, you know, with anxiety or panic attacks. My story is not new. There are, you know, a variety of other journalists, first responders, nurses, that are experiencing burnout and compassion fatigue just from being, you know, they've never had a hand that's, you know, laid on them. They may not have been, you know, shot at or anything like that. But you surround yourself with other people who have or, you know, been in some areas where you saw bodies or something like that. You know, it affects a person. The brain believes what it sees and it reacts in that way. So, you know, our hope is that more media consumers would do a better job of policing their own media diet.
Definitely. And yeah, what you say is really, really true. Again, I'm from El Salvador, and if anybody has seen the news, it's not like the best place to be, and I have been around these kind of situations that you describe. I have friends who have been stabbed, shot while being robbed or killed in some cases, and seen that a lot more than I would like to. And something that happened is that at some point I was able to go to Europe, and it was after I was like 3 months very stressed because we had an issue with a band of kidnappers who wanted to do us harm. So we went there trying to seek asylum. Hopefully, luckily nothing bad happened in the end. They were arrested and that was the end of it. But when I was in Europe, I remember that I was so stressed out of it, of that situation, that I wasn't able to sleep unless I had like a big kitchen knife next to my bed. And I was like in this place called Carlsberg, which is like a very small town in the middle of the forest. There is not even stoplights there. So it's so specific that you don't even need stoplights to regulate traffic over there. But for the first 3 months, it was that, like not being able to be completely relaxed. I saw the windows that were huge and didn't have any metal defenses over there. And I was thinking, and even though my logic went like, this is probably the safest place you have been in your entire life, there was something like an animal instinct that was telling me that, no, this is not safe, this is not safe. And I had to repeat myself many times, like I was telling myself at least 25 times a day, like, I am not there, I am not there, I am not there, until a final click many months later. And when I was able to finally get my brain to a place where it understood that I was safe, that I had left that behind, that I didn't have to deal with any of those things anymore, I realized that I was able to think better, faster, deeper. There were solutions that were coming out of my head that they would have never happened living normally, let's say, over in El Salvador. The amounts of energy I have were way better than before. And I realized, like, even though before that all these bad things happened, like living in El Salvador, there is like a constant thing, like say like a paranoia running in your head that you have to be aware that if something suddenly happens, you need to be ready to react. And that thing is consuming like mental energy, mental resources. And once you get rid of that, the brain works so much better. And yeah, I think that what you're saying about the consumption of what you're looking at, the things that even I had some times where I have gone deep into watching news on YouTube, and I had to stop that because it wasn't good as well. Again, like all these things, I think they matter way more than we are currently talking about.
Yeah, and we're not saying turn off your social media feed. We're not saying turn off the TV. You need that information, you know, to keep you safe, to know how to vote. What we're saying is, you know, you just need to supplement it with anything else. You just need to supplement it with something else. So, yeah.
Definitely. And have you ever had like a failure or an apparent failure that has set you up for success in the future?
I'm sorry, you cut out. Say that one more time.
Have you ever had like a failure, let's say, or something that looked like a failure, but that set you up for success in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a health struggle with you know, panic attacks in television. I was, you know, a huge failure. I felt like I couldn't function for a while, and I had to get out of television, which was really hard because it was impacting my health. And I needed to get into a job that I wasn't surrounded, and it was a little bit less fast-paced. I went to work for a great company called Veterans United, and told stories about veterans there. And I don't know that I would necessarily call it a failure at the time. You know, it's tough to leave what I loved doing, but it set me up. I now know, you know, why that happened to me, because perhaps I was supposed to create this channel that would help people, other people like me, you know, seek out some drugless solutions for that stress and burnout. Yeah, that would be one.
Definitely. Nice. And if you were to meet like a young driven student with a lot of talent who is about to enter the real world what advice would you give that person, and what advice should that person ignore?
Yeah, don't be afraid to fail. Failure is part of the process, and you end up winning in the end. Surround by yourself with people who know more about their areas of expertise than you do. Find a place, and this I put as number one, find a place to place your hope. So whatever you worship in your mind, whether it be God, Buddha, the light, or even if it's yourself, or you don't worship anybody at all, find something in which you place your hope, because that faith is going to be a guiding force to you in whatever you choose to do. So it's really helpful, been helpful to me and other people that I know, that they found some place to place their hope. And two, if you're an entrepreneur opening up your own company, recognize that your family are your first founders and your co-founders. And so before you take that big step of opening a business and the time-consuming process, you better make sure that your founders, aka your family, your co-founders, your family are okay with that, because it's not a decision that you make for yourself. It's a collective decision. And I myself have been really fortunate to have the support of my husband and my kids, who were my first co-founders. Granted, I have adult children. My kids are in their 20s, but and my husband's my big baby. But, definitely make sure you have the support of your family. So faith, family, failure, sometimes Fs aren't all that bad.
Definitely. And what are some opportunities that you are seeing right now in the world that not many people may know about them?
On our end, we're just seeing wearable data and what are companies going to do with all of that wearable data. Flat data dashboards are boring. In the future, will users really want to just track their data, or will they want to interact with that data? And we're betting on the fact that they're actually going to want to interact with it and, to know how it responds to media experiences. I think media is becoming less of a lean back and more of a lean forward in the way that you're, using your feelings to power these virtual worlds. I think we'll see more of that, not just in healthcare and not just for anxiety. I think in general, media platforms will be coming out with ways that it's assessing the data that comes from your wearables and saying, Jason needs positivity today, and it's going to serve up media to you from a database of content that's tagged by that emotion. There's that. I think, too, looking even further around the corner, biometric data, much like you get paid to give plasma or something like that. In the future, I can see just with everything as it relates to privacy that, users are going to want to maintain their own brainwave data, their own heart rate data, and maybe even the user can monetize that biometric data as opposed to, some third party, putting it up on a marketplace. I think it'll be interesting to see a shift in the future of users selling their data, not, companies, but the users retaining that control and then getting paid for giving up, some of that access and privacy.
That will be something that I really behind. I'm up for keeping the privacy. I kind of, the way things are going right now is a little bit too intense for me, but I do care about my privacy, and I think that will be an excellent option to be able to control that, definitely. So is there any last advice that you would like to give that we haven't talked yet into this interview?
No. You know, host a nerdy play date with somebody who in an industry that you know nothing about. Play. I think it's really important for technologists to play. You know, we don't sit down with our Tinker Toys, you know, very much as adults, and we really should do that as technologists, because there are beautiful things that you can create when you just take a moment to play.
Awesome. And if people want to find more about you and about Helium, where can they do so?
Yeah, so our company is called StoryUp, and we're the makers of Helium. And you can go to tryhelium.com. And Helium is spelled like healing, H-E-A-L-I-U-M. So try, T-R-Y-H-E-A-L-I-U-M.com. Or you can reach out to us at hello@story-up.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for giving us your time here and talking about your experience and your journey with Helium. It truly means a lot to me.
Well, good luck to you. I thank you for sharing your story with me about everything that you've endured. And I appreciate the opportunity to share. So keep going with your animation efforts, and excited to see what you build in the future.
Awesome. So I'm going to put all the links to Helium and their social networks in this post. So if you go into your website and find this post for this interview, you will find everything there. And if you like this interview, click the like button below and subscribe to our channel. Or if you're hearing us from the podcast, subscribe to your preferred platform. So until next time.